The Ghost Goal Podcast.
And we're back. Part four of our season previews. We're going to be looking at the teams that are in for top four this season. Basically, the five teams that realistically have a chance of getting top four this year. Some of the other teams we talked about on the other pods might have a chance, but these are the big boys. We're talking Liverpool. We're talking Arsenal. We're talking Manchester United, Manchester City, and then the newcomer to the block, Newcastle United. This is Javier. I'm here with Alex. This is episode 417.
What up?
How you doing, Alex?
Good. I'm a little deflated from that Christopher Nkunku injury that pretty much just set back the two pods ago that we did. A lot of Mike Chelsea predictions.
But, a lot of the good start to the season might not be as good as we thought it was going to be, because he was going to be a big part of that run. So I feel they're saying, 3 months at least, because he's got to get, pretty major surgery. So there's going to be a rehab involved, and then, it could even be setbacks after that. So you hope not. He's still young. He could bounce back from this injury, but not a great way to start off your Chelsea career. I think, Alex, I said jokingly, you have a new Arjen Robben, but I didn't know Robben started his career at Chelsea the same way, and he was always plagued with injuries. So not saying that's going to be the case, but big blow nonetheless. Where do you want to start here, Alex? I teased Newcastle. I feel like maybe we should start with them because they are the newcomers to the block, so-called, top four, top six. I don't think Tottenham is necessarily been replaced yet. They've been perennially making the Champions League for years. It's been the last couple of years they've fallen off, but Newcastle, I think they're always going to be in there now, from now until the foreseeable future. They finished fourth last season, 71 points. They made some pretty big signings. Harvey Barnes, I think, underrated signing that's kind of gone under the radar this summer. Not enough people, I think, are talking about that. We've talked a lot about Sandro Tonali on this pod. I think that was a coup by Eddie Howe. I don't know how they were able to get him for only $64 million. I think it's just because Italian teams don't have a ton of money, so they can't necessarily ask for a shitload of money either, because they're not dishing any out. So to lose their centerpiece player that was probably going to be the center of their midfield for a decade, this is the type of player Newcastle can hold on to for a decade and might become like a cult hero in the future if he plays and wins trophies with Newcastle. So and they just made a pretty recent signing as well. Tino Livramento, Alex, one dear to your heart. 37 million euros. That's a lot. So Southampton made a big profit on that. I don't know if Chelsea have a sell-on clause, but I assume you guys do have something like that.
Chelsea did have a sell-on clause, so yeah, a little bit of money went to Chelsea. But it's not like a lot of signings, but it's three pretty impactful signings. Like Barnes should start right away now that Saint-Maximin has been sold off. And Tonali can start in midfield with Guimaraes and, form one of the better midfield duos on paper, at least, right from the beginning of the season. Tino Livramento, even though he has the big price tag, it seems like a little bit of a risk, but one that Newcastle can afford to take, not just because of the, Saudi owners and all the money, but because they have Kieran Trippier already, one of the better right backs in the league, their captain. He's on the other side of 30 from where you would want. But, he doesn't show any signs of slowing down yet. So while Tino Livramento continues to rehab from the ACL injury he got at the end of the season before last, which basically kept him out for all of last season, maybe he can come in and play some spurts at left back. He did do that a couple times at Southampton in the season he was healthy for. And then eventually take over for Trippier at that right wing back spot. And, he was Chelsea Academy Player of the Year 3 years ago, I want to say, but obviously didn't see a way into Chelsea's team because of Reece James, and decided to go out to another Premier League team in Southampton and prove himself. And it's paid off big time for him, other than that injury. So there are three nice signings for Newcastle, but
I think it's impressive that even with the injury, though, he got his move, like a big move, so quickly. Yeah. So I think good on him, and that's probably a good sign that he's still a very good player and still has everything there. But you said there's still question marks on if this team can you know, perform defensively the same way that they did last season.
So
they definitely fell off.
It's not defensively
at the second half of the year. I kind of am.
It's going forward for me. Like they have promising players like Barnes and Alexander Isak and Callum Wilson, despite his injury history, is still a solid goal scorer when healthy. They have good players that, you know, you wouldn't be immediately worried, but with the introduction of Champions League this season, when they had no European football at all last season, sort of going on the fast track, avoiding Europa League or Europa Conference League altogether and going straight to Champions League, I am interested to see how it plays out, you know, because one injury to Isak, who's not, you know, the most healthy player either. It's him and Wilson are, you know, both excellent when available, but you have to be honest, they do have pretty checkered injury histories. One or two injuries to those two, and all of a sudden, you know, it's looking pretty thin up top for Newcastle. So with, you know, the new challenges there with Champions League, along with maintaining and staying in the top four qualification in the league this year, I feel like they could have done more. And honestly, I would not be surprised if they did do more business for another attacking player, either during this window or in January, if things look like they're in doubt for their qualification for next year's Champions League. So I wouldn't be worried, but, you know, right now, out of all of these five teams that we're going to be talking about, I think Newcastle are just ahead of Liverpool because they have such a solid defensive core and now midfield of players that they can rely on. They're kind of the inverse of Liverpool, who we'll get to in a little bit here. Are you still, you know, confident that Newcastle can maintain the kind of like form that they produced last season?
No, and you make a very good point. I think that not having any type of European football, you know, not necessarily having that pressure in the midweek all the time, it led to being able to stay mostly healthy. I mean, Eddie Howe picked pretty much the same 11 almost throughout the entire year. You know, it was very, very consistent. He's a guy who likes playing the same 11 over and over, and he's not going to be able to do that this year. He's going to have to use his bench players more, and I feel like it's going to produce a sloppier defense. You know, they're going to be leakier, and I don't know if they're going to be able to score as much. So I actually think there's going to be a little bit of a downtick for them. I don't know how they're going to do in Europe. They might do okay, but I in the Premier League, I definitely think they're going to suffer. And I could see them, you know, dropping a place or two, and out of Champions League. So there's definitely teams like Villa. And I'm not so sure about Brighton, cause they're going to, you know, have that Europa League. I guess Villa have Conference League, but how much of a strain do you think that puts as well? I guess it all matters, because all of these teams technically haven't had Europe before, and you know, it remains to be seen how much it does or does not affect them. And I think they need more depth to kind of soften that blow in case they do have a few injuries, like you say. So I'm going to predict that they finish lower, Alex, than fourth place.
Yeah, I'm still thinking through it. But I mean, I guess we can sort of come back to that when we give like the official predictions for
maybe
league
sixth
winner
place and, for them, yeah.
And top four at the right end of the pod. But I mean, for now, do you want to jump to Liverpool since I mentioned them? There's, I mean, plenty to mention.
Yeah, they finished fifth last season with 67 points. They made a couple big signings that we've talked about already on this pod, Alexis McAllister and Dominic Szoboszlai. But
excellent. Look at you on the first go, getting the pronunciation right. Hasn't even kicked off yet, and you're already getting it right. I'm happy for you.
There we go, Alex. There we go. I had to pick it up at some point. But no, I think that they still have some big holes, like Fabinho and Henderson, two of their more defensive midfielders. Even Naby Keita and James Milner played there. I mean, they essentially moved on five center midfielders. Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's played there a decent bit for them, James Milner, Naby Keita, Jordan Henderson, Fabinho, and even Firmino was playing in the middle of the park for them. So that's a lot of players that I think, you know, not necessarily all of them were not playing at the same time. You know, I think only maybe Fabinho and Henderson were regular starters in there. Milner for a long time was, but wasn't this last season. it's still a big loss. I think huge personalities in the dressing room. Henderson was the captain. Milner was a big personality. You know, Fabinho, leader on the pitch, was, you know, we were talking about him not being as good.
Not only was he not as good last year, he was outright dreadful. And I don't know many Liverpool fans that like wouldn't agree with that. It was just as jarring to Liverpool fans to see Fabinho be like the defensive cog in their midfield for a team the previous year that went to a Champions League final and challenged for the league until the final day. And then he came back for the past season and he was a training cone and, you know, could have been sent off plenty of times, got plenty of yellow cards, just reckless. And a big part of the reason why Liverpool's defense like fell apart last season. So I don't think it's terrible that they let go of players like Fabinho and Jordan Henderson.
No, me neither. I think
they still have to fill that void. They absolutely have to fill that void.
It doesn't matter that the players weren't good. That was my point, you know, that even though someone like Fabinho wasn't playing well, like they're still going to have to go and I think spend big money again and go get a 50, 60 million pound center midfielder who can, you know, I know there's been rumors of not, you know, they've been, had a couple bids for Lavia rejected. I mean, that would have been a great signing for them, but they definitely need to go and get, go out in the market, sign, I think a couple of center midfielders, maybe even, you know, cause it feels like they're super short in midfield and they've got problems in more than just midfield, Alex. I mean, defensively kind of feels like they're short at the back as well. You know, Trent Alexander-Arnold's kind of moved into midfield. So maybe that alleviates a little bit of that load. So maybe they only need one more midfielder, but you know, that probably means that they need a starting right back, you know, and they haven't signed any defenders at all. To me, defenders are Pep Guardiola's show. Like when he goes and spends big money, it's almost always been on wing backs, center backs. He just went and spent $100 million on Guardiola. The man knows that that's where you go and spend the big money. And that like Liverpool, when they made their biggest jump, I think in recent history was when they went and spent big money on Van Dijk and on Alisson, you know, on their defense essentially, and Fabinho. Every time that they went and spent big money to improve defensively, they improved a lot as a team. And I think that they're going to have to go and spend like a similar amount. I mean, that's like $150 million that they spent on those three players. And I think maybe even more, maybe close to $200 million, because I think Alisson was around 50, so was Fabinho, and you know, Van Dijk was 70. So it's not dark days for Liverpool, but I kind of feel like after getting McAllister and Szoboszlai done so quickly, like what have they been doing? It doesn't feel like they've been super proactive in the window. There's been a month and a half since those signings. Yeah, but like, come on, man. Like you look at other teams like Chelsea, United, Arsenal, City, they've all been making moves and they've all been signing players, moving players on. Like I know Liverpool have been moving players on, but they have to get a couple more signings. And I'm sure that if not, they're going to be in trouble for top four as well. I mean, it might be like a bloody race for that fourth place, and they may go till the end with it. But I mean, attacking wise, Liverpool, we've talked about their talents already, how many players they have, how many combinations of players. We don't know who's going to start other than Mohamed Salah. I think that's like another problem that Klopp has, that there's 5-6 starting players in
attack.
It's
a problem you want to have, you know?
You do.
You have all these options and you have like to sift through them and figure out.
But none of them are necessarily like the standout best players, which to me is a little worrying as well.
Well, that's because they haven't kicked a ball yet, really. I mean, Darwin Nunez has looked like pretty good in preseason.
I think probably Luis Diaz. I think
Luis Diaz
is
back.
Probably
he was injured for most of last season.
I think
at least
Diaz is probably the starter, but then you have Gakpo, Jota, and Nunez all for that middle spot, and that's a lot of players vying for that one last spot. So it's
well, the benefit, you know, of signing players like Gakpo in January, Szoboszlai this summer, and also Alexis McAllister, is that those players specifically, they can play like a various different roles. You know, Szoboszlai can play as the attacking midfielder or play out in the left wing. Gakpo, the same thing. He can even play up as a center forward. Jota can play on either wing and as the center forward. It's again a problem, but a good problem for Liverpool to have. So I don't worry about them going forward. It's you know, how this team sorts out that midfield problem. That's still the main issue to me, because right now it's looking like it's going to be, to start the season, Trent Alexander-Arnold. kind of as like the defensive
Harvey
midfielder.
Elliott and probably Alexis McAllister.
I don't know if Harvey Elliott would get into their midfield because, you know, they'd still have Trent and Alexis McAllister as like two surefire, like best available players because Thiago Alcantara is
still
injured.
There. Oh,
he's out
injured, of course.
At least to start the season. And so's Stefan Bicetic, the Spanish midfielder who looked pretty good for a few weeks last season before he got injured. He's still recovering from that injury. So maybe he's an option. Maybe they give him an expanded role and he becomes key to their midfield. But even so, you'd still expect them to make one more midfield signing. So I still think this team falls under the sort of qualities that Klopp wants from his teams. Young, energetic, high pressing. It's just going to be if teams can get past that initial press, which admittedly is difficult against Liverpool, you're going to see a lot of open spaces for them to counter on. And I think it's going to make for a really like exciting opening day game against Chelsea because, you know, we have a lot of the same issues, even worse than Liverpool. So hopefully it's not another nil-nil like it has been for like four straight games between Chelsea and Liverpool. It's like a curse at this point.
I'm going to call no chance on that one. No chance that it's a nil-nil.
Yeah, well, I thought that the last couple times we played them, and
goals.
It somehow ended up being nil-nil, so who knows. Yeah, we'll save the predictions for the end for where we think they Liverpool end up, but they certainly have a lot of work to do. Next up, I feel like it's only fair to bring up Manchester United. You know, I think it's fair to leave Arsenal, Manchester City for the title conversation. Manchester United ended up
You don't think
pretty
there's
solidly
some salty United
four.
Fans there? Saying, we're going to be in the title contenders
well, let's,
as well.
Let's talk about it. I mean, I'm not going to say that Manchester United are in the title conversation, even though they kind of were skirting around that area around January or February of last season. They've made some like very impactful signings, but I still feel like with Champions League this season, similar issue to Newcastle, that they're in terms of depth, they may just be a little understaffed. I like their signings. I just feel like they needed one more like polished player, and instead they've gone out and gotten Rasmus Højlund. We haven't really talked about him yet because, you know, we've been doing these previews ever since that news got announced, so we haven't been talking about Manchester United. But from what you've seen of him, do you think he has the ability that he could come in first season and, you know, boost that Manchester United attack? Because right now it's pretty much Rashford and Bruno Fernandes who are the most consistent attacking
options. I honestly
don't
know too much about him. He does look like he's fairly physical and imposing for only being 20 years old, which is definitely a good sign for the Premier League for the future, similar to like a Darwin Nunez. I don't know if he has... It does look like he's a little bit more composed on the ball than someone like Darwin and probably not as flashy. But it might be the type of player that United need, especially if they aren't going to have Greenwood in the equation, even though he, you know...
Let's leave Greenwood out of this until whatever decision
is
made.
Yeah, something happens with that. But
United
still.
Have still been like completely radio silent about whether he's, you know, going to be back in the team. There's been like media leaks that he may be back, and I'm pretty sure that's the club themselves leaking that just to see what the temperature of the water is with the public for him coming back. But they still have plenty of options. You know, they've spent money on players like Antony last season, who, you know, you would expect to progress this season. Rashford had one of his best
fantastic.
Seasons.
Fantastic.
Garnacho is a good option to play on either wing or, you know, replace Rashford if he's injured.
I think Onana's probably an upgrade, a big upgrade on De Gea. I think they're going
to... Oh, yeah. Ten Hag wants to play.
I was about to say, they're suddenly going to be a lot harder to get the ball off of. You know, Onana's going to be able to play quick passes out to the wingbacks or to Bruno Fernandes, and their distribution's suddenly going to be much better than it was, which is going to bring their pressing game to another level as well. So I think United are going to go up a level this season with players like Mount, who's also going to help the press. I think Højlund, he's the type of player who's young and maybe can be molded to whatever Ten Hag needs. So again, this is, to me, very, very good signings. Even Johnny Evans as your like Maguire fifth center back replacement. I think I'd rather have Johnny Evans than Maguire. So all of those things are, you know, not bad for United. Some of them are very, very good, like Onana. I think Mason Mount also just, you know, I know he missed a sitter, typical Mason, but he'll score some screamers this season, and he still looked good in build up and pressing for them. So he still does what, you know, what Mason Mount does best, and I'm sure he just needs a couple months in the team to really gain his fitness and match form. But I do think we're going to see the best of someone like Mason very quickly right now. So it does seem like Tenog's putting more faith in him than.
Were you saying that signing might not work out when we first talked about it?
Yeah, I was, but it does look like Ten Hag.
What, him missing a sitter is making you reconsider that? Like, what is that? That doesn't make sense.
No, I'm saying like he's looked good outside of that.
I'm just saying you changed your tune a little bit from when we first talked about the signing.
Yeah, now I've seen him in the team, and I've seen how much Ten Hag plays him, and like actually likes his game. And I mean, it's just I thought he was going to be more of a bit part player to start, and he hasn't been. So let's see if that's going to be the case when the season starts. But he is competing with a lot of players who, you know, attacking players. If he does play on the wings, who are going to want to come in the 60th minute, and me knocking on the door to start. So if he slips for a game or two and doesn't do well, he'll be on the bench. I don't
see Mason Mount being played out on the wings. Like for how Bruno Fernandes presses, which he doesn't at all. You need a player like Mount in there in that midfield leading that press, or at least being the player who pounces on a misplaced pass when
it's
the
unfair.
Forward
I've
line
seen
is
Bruno
pressing.
I've seen Bruno pressing.
He's good at many things. Pressing is not something, you know, his defensive work rate is not something I would credit him for. He's good at plenty of like attacking attributes more so than Mason Mount. But that, like, they're going to have two very separate roles, despite the fact they're both considered attacking midfielders. And I like that you mentioned Onana and Mount at the same time, because their impact at the top of the field for Mount and at the back for Onana, in terms of, you know, continuing this transition for Manchester United and how Erik ten Hag wants to play, I can't think of too many players outside of those two that would have helped Manchester United as a team continue that transition to, you know, the possession pressing sort of style that Ten Hag almost perfected at Ajax. And he's obviously worked with Onana before when they were both at Ajax and before Onana left and went to Inter. And Mason Mount, to me, is, you know, he's the dream midfielder for managers like Ten Hag, like Klopp, like Pep Guardiola. They would all take that player in their midfield. And, you know, United fans are probably going to criticize Mason Mount and say, like, oh, he doesn't score or assist enough. I can assure you at Chelsea, he scored and assisted plenty, and he made us a better pressing team. In his first year at Chelsea, I was even surprised by how good of a high-pressing team we were in Frank Lampard's first season and with a transfer ban. He was absolutely pivotal to helping Chelsea get back or maintain top four when everyone else, myself included, was, you know, picking us to finish outside of the top four. Just to bring Højlund into that discussion, I don't even think Højlund needs to be like a super successful attacking player in terms of goals and assists right off the bat. If Rashford and Bruno are doing their jobs, they score plenty of goals and set up others just by themselves. If Højlund can just be an energetic and kind of a nuisance up front, I think he could be very impactful for the team. And, you know, people may criticize him and say, you know, he doesn't score enough. Maybe he only gets like 7 or 8 goals this season. But I think his impact could be felt, you know, throughout the team, even without like goals and big attacking numbers. Because he's a unit. The guy's like 6'3", and he's pacey. I've seen him knock the ball past players in, you know, European competitions and in Serie A and just run right by them, which you wouldn't usually think of a player of his sort of physical profile doing that. But that's where the Haaland comparisons come from. You know, not just because they have similar-ish sounding last names. It's because they're, you know, physical freaks who have all of the tools. Højlund just needs to add the goals to really justify that price tag. So it's a promising transfer window for Manchester United, and I'm sure United fans are very excited. I'm not quite ready to talk about them in terms of the league just yet. We got to see how that Højlund signing
plays out. I don't think so yet either. I definitely want to see them play how they do in some of these big games. I still think that it's a little too early for them to be making title contender claims, but I think they could be a lock for top four.
No one but Manchester City is a lock for top four. You know, this is my policy. No one is a lock for top four.
I beg to defer.
Which is a lovely segue to your lot.
Yes, our lot, Alex. The lot that finished second last season, Arsenal, 84 points. We've got some big signings we made this summer. I know you've heard me gush about Declan Rice and Kai Havertz. I haven't gushed enough about Jurrien Timber, Alex, because I think that he's going to be an unbelievable player in the Premier League for Arsenal. I don't know if Arsenal's ever had a player quite like Jurrien Timber. He's extremely good defensively, sharp, seemingly can play on the left and on the right and in the middle. We haven't seen him play in the middle or on the right. He's just been played at left back, and he's done great so far. But he was bought as a right back and as, you know, a center back. So, it's exciting to... I think we did see him actually on his debut. His first game, he came in for Ben White and played on the right and looked really good for like the last 10 minutes against the MLS team. But can't take too much from that. But I know it's been preseason and, you know, I'm hyping him up a lot. But he might end up being, you know, one of the best fullbacks in Arsenal's history when all is said and done. That's how excited I am about this guy. We paid big money for him, 40 million euros, for a wingback. He's only 22. I'm just so excited to see, like, what he brings to the team and how he can elevate us defensively. Him along with Declan Rice, I feel like, are going to take this team defensively to another level. I think we were one of the best teams in the Premier League last year defensively, but we still were leaking goals against, you know, some of these mid-table teams or lower-table teams. Sometimes could give us, you know, a hard time on set pieces. I think getting someone like Declan Rice, getting someone like Jurrien Timber, both, like, physical, imposing players, will help on set pieces, will help us not get bullied. And then David Raya, Alex, just got announced today that it's pretty much all said and done. We're gonna sign David Raya on a 1-year loan for £3 million, and then have the option to buy him at the end of the season for £27 million, which pretty decent price tag overall. If it ends up being £30 million for, if we end up spending that money on him, he'll be our starting goalkeeper, and that's another player who, if he ends up breaking into the team, I mean, I think significantly better than Ramsdale on corners. Probably has better distribution than Ramsdale. Shot-stopping ability is similar, and it could just be that next level that we need at goalie as well. And it's, to me, an incredible move by Arteta and Edu to go pick up another goalie and try to even upgrade on probably the one position that some people were saying, hey, you know, Ramsdale did have some howlers last season. You know, there were times where he looked a little shaky. He had, like, a bad run of form. If that ever happens, we're going to be able to put David Raya in, and that's going to be David.
I mean, this time he is Spanish, so it's not David Moyes. It is David Raya. So you're right this time.
Okay, but, you know, it's big signings and this loan signing. You know, we went and spent something like $230 million or $220 million. I don't remember the last time Arsenal went and spent that much money in a transfer window. It's obvious that we're trying to win the league.
Wasn't it two years ago? Didn't you guys spend like $200 million? You spent like $200 million on a bunch of players, like Tomiyasu, Ben White.
No, that was like $130 million. It was like $100 million less.
I think it was closer to 200, but oh well.
I just looked at a graph on this, Alex.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, no, undoubtedly it was like $130 million back then.
/Gunners, of course.
Well, no, Arteta has spent over $500 million now in the time he's been there since 2020. So in 3 years, he's been given, you know, over $500 million, and he's produced, though. He's made a team that, you know, I'd say 9 out of 10 of the signings that he's made so far have been, you know, all-stars, have improved the team or taken this team to the next level. He's improved the players who were there as well. And then, you know, I think we have one big hole that we're sad to have lost, Granit Xhaka. You know, only 30 years old, probably could have played another couple of years in the team. I think it was a pretty big part of the team last season. And our midfield is definitely still transitioning. I did enjoy very much so the Partey-Rice pivot with Odegaard in front of them. Gave us a real defensive solidity. It kind of let Partey still be that octopus in midfield, and Declan Rice would just, you know, kind of jump and cut out passes or make interceptions, and he's just so quick at doing that. And Partey's not. That's like Partey's probably the worst part of his game is just when a player is making quick movements through midfield, sometimes he just goes right through Partey. But Declan Rice will either throw you to the ground or take the ball from you. And it was a big weakness that we had last season that I think is another thing that's going to be shored up.
What does this all mean for Arsenal's season? What is this leading to?
We're winning the league, Alex.
Ah, okay. There it is.
Yeah. I haven't predicted us to win the league ever in one of these pods. I do think this is going to be it. I think this might be the year we do it. I'm not so sure. At first, I thought it was going to be something like the Champions League that we might go for, but I feel like that might be too much for us this season, and we might, you know, kind of flame out of that maybe in like the round of 16 or you know, the quarterfinals, which I'd be fine with. But I really do want us to go for the league this season. I think this is going to be the one year that maybe Manchester City have a little dip because they just won the treble. You know, there was a lot of big outgoings that were, you know, we're going to talk about them in a sec, but there might be a little dip in form and they might finish with like 84, 85 points, similar to what Arsenal did last season. So still incredibly good in the league, but maybe just dip that little bit that would allow another team to jump in there and win the league with, you know, 88 or 89 points, like what Manchester City did last year. So City weren't incredible last year. They went on an amazing winning run that ultimately won them the league.
They were 12 game winning last run. Year. You can't say the City weren't incredible.
No, I just mean over the full. I know. I mean over the full. You know, over the full course of the season, like their whole body of work. Yes, they were incredible in the end. You know, the last half of the season, they were the best team in the world, not even close. But the first half of the season, it took them a while to sort it out. And I think they've lost big pieces, and it's not going to be easy for them to just, you know, loop. But I think keeping Kyle Walker was huge.
I get what you mean. And this actually kind of brings back my biggest concern about Arsenal, is that Arsenal could have another 10-point lead in the league in the first half of this season, and I'm still going to sit here and predict Manchester City to win it, because Pep Guardiola has figured out the formula for his team specifically in peaking at the right time of the season. And that's the second half of the season. He can lose a game at home to Brentford like he did last season, or to Crystal Palace a couple of years ago. And it's not a concern in the first half of the season. What's important is that he does what, you know, Jurgen Klopp is going to have to do this season, and sifts through all of these amazing attacking and midfield players that he has to find the right formula to get them where they need to be by the time the turn of the year rolls around and the run into the end of the season occurs in the last 2 months. It's very apparent to me that Mikel Arteta, and for good reason, he's a young manager, only in his third or fourth season as a manager of his own team, he hasn't figured out that formula yet. Arsenal have had, you know, good starts to the season like they did last year, even the year or two before when you lost your first three games. You then came back with like a long unbeaten run that got you back up into the top four discussion the previous season to last. But his teams just fall apart in the last 2 months of every season. They fall apart when it matters most. And I'm never going to back a team like that to win the league until they prove me wrong. And Manchester City have proven me right too many times. They've even proven me wrong two years ago when Chelsea, I was predicting us to win the league, and you were sitting here saying, no, it's going to be Manchester City. And you were right. And we had a bunch of things like injuries and Romelu Lukaku happened to us that, you know, were a reason for that. But we didn't peak at the right time of the season. We peaked too early, fell apart, and then couldn't get it back together. So I don't think it will be that bad for Arsenal. I still think they're going to be the main contender to push City for that league title and maybe even have the lead like they did last season for the majority of the season. But just with the inexperience and obviously with the introduction of like Champions League this season, which Arsenal haven't had for 6 or 7 years now, it's going to be another front that's going to be something that maybe Arsenal don't like going try to win the Champions League this season, but you guys will still take it seriously. You'll want to finish top of your group. If you have a matchup with like a big team, like a Real Madrid or a Bayern Munich, you'll put your undivided attention towards that. And that could make you suffer in the league a little bit. So I'm still sticking with Manchester City, though I do appreciate, Javier, that you know, now is the time for an Arsenal fan to predict
there's no other time. I think this is going to be the only time that we could possibly think that we're going to win the league at the beginning of the season. And I know City are still favorites. I mean, they've won 5 out of the last 6. So it's impossible not to think that they are. And no team, Alex, has ever won four Premier Leagues in a row.
Right, which so I think is what will motivate them.
I'm betting with history. I'm betting for history.
I think that will motivate them.
And I think
them.
that will continue.
For Pep Guardiola to do something that Sir Alex Ferguson never did, like winning the treble last year was just matching a feat that Sir Alex Ferguson achieved. If he can win the league, he doesn't even need the cups, like the FA and Carabao Cup. He doesn't even need to care about those. If he wins the league and Champions League double this season, goes, you know, four in a row in the league and two in a row in the Champions League, which no English team has ever done, in the Premier League era, at least. I think Liverpool pulled it off back in the and Nottingham Forest. Then you can have a serious conversation about Pep Guardiola. Is he better than, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson? So I think that and, you know, the players themselves, that will motivate them, you know, to win that fourth Champions League, or that fourth Premier League, while doing well again in the Champions League. Because the Champions League for City is probably easier to win than the Premier League. Like, who are the other contenders in the Champions League? Real Madrid don't have a center forward. Bayern Munich are, you know, on the verge, maybe getting Kane. If they get him, then we can talk again. But they don't have a center forward. PSG are in tatters since Messi left and Mbappe's, you know, thrown his toys out of the pram. It's a wide open road for City to win that Champions League, kind of at a canter, and win a fourth Premier League in a row. And I think the system they established last year, yes, they have lost players like Ilkay Gundogan, but I think, you know, moving Bernardo Silva from the sort of right wing back spot that he was at, ended up playing the end of last season, into one of those two attacking midfield roles alongside De Bruyne. We've even mentioned moving Grealish into one of those roles and then replacing whichever player goes central with Phil Foden out wide. They can maintain the same sort of form they had last year. And they're probably going to sign someone else, Javier. They lost Riyad Mahrez.
They probably are, but I was going to say I'm worried if they don't, because I think they're losing a good 25 goals from their team in Riyad Mahrez and Ilkay Gundogan. And these were players that scored huge goals, both of these players last season, in big moments when City were down, Haaland wasn't playing well, De Bruyne wasn't playing well. You had Ilkay Gundogan come up and step up to the plate and score braces. Mahrez come in and score late goals. I mean, these were big, big players that had big parts in the treble last year. And I know that they've brought in Kovacic. I know that they've brought in Guardiola. But they're very, very different players to Mahrez and Gundogan. And it wouldn't surprise me if City become even better defensively this season and they're absolute powerhouses at the back and almost impossible to score on and teams get super frustrated that way. But I could also see them, you know, teams grinding out 0-0 draws against Manchester City or, you know, randomly beating them 1-0.
I don't see too much of that because, again, Haaland, unless there's an injury, of course, is just going to keep getting better. And frankly, at this point, we've had, you know, pretty much every summer, there's always a few seemingly key players that leave Manchester City. And if anything, it's just become a part of Pep Guardiola's identity that he does that to refresh the squad and keep them hungry. Because they know, like, Nathan Ake just had, like, the best season of his career last year. You wouldn't have thought that they would be looking to replace him. And they just went out and signed Josko Guardiola, who will replace him. They signed him for almost 100 million, 90 million, something like that. He's going to be a better option at that left center back role than Ake is. And Ake is going to be depth for that position now. So it's things like that all across the squad that keep those players sharp and hungry. I don't think it's going to be a case of...
No, I mean, I think it's going to be players like Cole Palmer and...
Paqueta, if they sign him. Olise, they've been interested in as well. There's attacking players they can bring in.
It looks like they're trying to bring in more attacking players, and they've got options on the bench in their academy, and they've had a bunch of good players that have gone out on loan and had good loan spells, and I know they've brought some of them back, so it could be that Guardiola wants to play a little bit more with some of the players he already has there. You know, you never know, because Guardiola is an incredible manager, probably, you know, the best of all time, so we'll see what he does, and they're definitely favorites to win. I just think that this could be the one year that that Arsenal push far enough and City just drop off a little bit for once and let us nip in there, but I mean, I'm not confident about it, and I also think like Arsenal have a you know, a little bit more of a spread out run of games this season. We don't have like an insanely hard end of the season like we did last year, so you know that remains to be seen. If we go deep in the Champions League, maybe we will, and the team might still collapse. So there's a lot of factors. I'm sure I'll change my mind several times during the season, but I am predicting us to finish first and City second.
Okay, so who makes up the rest of your top four?
Manchester United three. Depending on the signings, because I do think Liverpool, like I think Liverpool finished fourth, but I think that's because they make a couple of more signings. I don't think they'll just go the rest of this window with just the two signings that they've made. So I'm going to say fourth contending, but if they make no signings, then I'm going to say Newcastle sneak into fourth if Liverpool don't make the signings. But I got Newcastle actually finishing sixth and Villa fifth. So
okay. I'm going to like stick to my guns that I've kind of been doing for all of these preview pods. I'm just going to give the preview or the prediction for, you know, right now, August 9th, whatever the date is today, 2023. I think as it's currently constituted, I think it's Manchester City first, Arsenal second. I think I'm going to say Newcastle third, because they do have the ability and the money to go out and, you know, fix whatever problems may arise throughout the season. And then I'll say Manchester United fourth and Liverpool again, just outside of that top four. But, you know, Liverpool, they would be my favorite to win the Europa League this season. And maybe they get into the Champions League next year by that route. So,
yeah, it's a good shot.
I don't think everyone ends up crying at the end of this season out of all of these five teams. All right, Javier, we did it. We managed to keep this fourth and final preview pod to just around 40 minutes. It was going to be a struggle.
You forced my hand, Alex. I wanted to talk more about Arsenal, but
Javier,
you know,
we talk about Arsenal every week.
I let it go, Alex.
And guess what, Javier? We will have another pod after this opening weekend of the Premier League season. I'm sure you'll have plenty to gush about after Arsenal destroy Nottingham Forest at home. There's always another pod, Javier.
Don't say something like that. We lost to Brentford. Like we always fuck up our opening day of the season. I'm not confident.
Look
at
you predicting you to win the league like 5 minutes ago, and now you're like, don't curse us. Don't jinx us, Alex.
Don't reverse jinx.
I'm just saying there's going to be more time to talk about Arsenal. There is not more time, though, to join the Ghost Goal Podcast Fan League on fantasy.premierleague.com. The time is running out. Friday, I believe at 2 p.m. will be the deadline for setting your lineup for the first week of the season, since the first game will be Manchester City at Burnley Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S. So go to that website now, create your team. Just make sure you create the team. You can join the fan league later and it will, you know, bring your points into it. Just make sure you create your team and then go to our Twitter at Ghost Goal Pod. We've got the code to get into the league, the Ghost Goal Podcast Fan League, pinned as the top tweet on our Twitter account. Go find it there. I'm sure I'll post it again before Friday rolls around. But you can beat me and Javier in Fantasy Premier League if you so choose. Thank you, Javier, for jumping on this one. Can't wait for the Premier League to start. If you want to follow Javier on Twitter, you can follow him at JavierRev9. And if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, you can follow me at ASMoss92. And finally, the podcast socials at Ghost Goal Pod for both Twitter and Instagram. Enjoy the return of the Premier League this weekend, everyone. And until next time, see ya.